This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by ThePerfectTrick.com. If you are new to magic and listening to this podcast, you are learning a lot, hopefully, and you're enjoying this, and you get to go back into the archives and learn some more then also. And that means that you're probably wanting to buy some magic tricks to help you along your journey to being a magician. And one of the places I would check online would be with The Perfect Trick. com. Eric Citron is the owner and operator behind theperfecttrick.com, and he will be able to fix you up. Now, if you're someone who has been using someone else religiously and you feel that you already have a relationship with some other online dealer, that's fine. If you're looking for someone that you'd like to help out, then you probably should go and check this out, because you get a discount if you just put in the promo code WORD when you check out. So again, go check them out. ThePerfectTrick.com. Before I introduce our guest for today, I wanted to report something in the category of in case you missed it with our friend Chip Romero, who was the feature of one of our recent podcasts. In case you don't know it by now, Chip is the Doug Henning guy, and he has, golly, what, over 80%, I believe, of Doug's things, all of, and I say things, I mean, oh my gosh, it's incredible. As not just illusions and his costumes, but also contracts and things from his office. It's amazing. Anyhow, there is an article in the October issue of Vanish Magazine that's published by Paul Romani, and if you go back, you can hear a conversation we had with Paul then also about Vanish Magazine. If you don't subscribe to the magazine, you should. It is for free, and it is a fantastic digital magazine that you can download, and it has just thousands of subscribers, as it should. It's amazing. And there is a nice article by Charles Bach, so thank you, Charles, for writing that up about Chip, and I know that you guys will enjoy that to read a little bit more about some of the things that are in Chip's collection, and you get to see some of the photos then from his house with his collection then also. He's still acquiring new things all the time. He had just texted me just yesterday, something I can't really talk about yet, but something else that he has acquired, and he's continuing to find new treasures all the time. But anyhow, great article. Thanks, Chip, for sharing that, and for also Charles Bach for writing it, and for Paul Romani in publishing in the October issue of Vanish Magazine. And I believe you can download that. Probably go to vanish.com or just do a Google search. You can find it. Well, this week we're going to be talking with Mario Marchese, who is perhaps better known as Mario the Magician. I happened to see him at the Magi Fest in Columbus, Ohio earlier this year, here in 2018, and I was just impressed as heck the way that he could handle an audience and the way he worked with children. He just seemed to me to be kind of like the Mr. Rogers of magicians, except he works a lot faster. Mr. Rogers is very slow and methodical, but caring for children. And I believe that Mario as well is very caring for children and has nothing but their best interests in heart. In particular, that he is always encouraging them to get involved with creating things and to have fun and have fun with science and math and get involved with STEM and makers fairs and other kinds of things that are out there on the internet that are the good things and good ways of trying to exercise their creative muscle and help the children to grow. Anyhow, he is just a ball of energy, and I had an opportunity to chat with him when he was at the Texas Association of Magicians Convention here in Houston recently, and we got to sit down in the hallway before he was going to be performing later that evening. What was kind of interesting is because he was not as well known among the attendees of the TAOM, so he can kind of walk around anonymously until I'm sure after his show. The thing was, he was one of the people on the Sunday night show, and so he lectured on Monday morning, and he and Carissa Hendricks both had performed, I believe, that evening, and had also lectured the next day, which meant that those who didn't know either one of them really said, well, we're going to stick around, and we really had more people attend the Monday morning lectures than typical, because most people head home on Monday, because they got to fly home, drive home, and get back to work on Tuesday. But anyhow, a lot of people hung around and got a lot out of both of these lectures, of both Carissa and with Mario. But Mario just, again, is a ball of energy and also very, very interesting fellow to talk with and inspirational. And I know that you're really going to enjoy this week's episode that we're going to be chatting with him. I also encourage you to go over to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, because some of the links that he talks about, you can click on those and follow him to find more information about 3D printing and some of the other stuff that he talks about. So I just encourage you again to take a look at that and some of his videos and the pictures that we had posted. And I'm excited to introduce our guest here this week. So please welcome Mr. Mario the Magician, or the Maker, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and you've got Mario the Maker. What is exactly?
Mario the Maker, Mario the Magician. Yeah, we.
Hello, Mario. Good morning. Welcome to the Magic Word.
Thanks so much for having me. This is so exciting. Yeah.
Have you been on a lot of podcasts or recorded much?
A couple, yeah. And it's always been a treat, you know, because it's like a time capsule. It's just great listening in on stuff. So a lot of my inspiration comes from listening to podcasts. So I can name definitely a bunch of magicians. But yeah, thanks for having me on.
Sure, you're welcome. Well, you know, the reason I want to chat with you is that I saw you at Magi Fest, and the first time I'd actually seen and heard you, and oh my gosh, you know, that you know, Trixie Bond has been a longtime best friend, and
nice.
I have seen her, you know, do children's shows and everything, you know, for years
incredible.
And years. Everybody has a little bit different kind of a twist
That's
with
right.
her having her character, and you have a character also
That's
as
right.
being a maker, inventor kind of a thing, of a person, and the way that you interacted with the kids when I saw you there at the Magi Fest, it was just amazing, just a fantastic job.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was so much fun. What made Magi Fest really special was how they encouraged the public to bring their families in, you know, and the magicians get to sit in the back and watch, you know, some a performer, of interacting with kids right in real time, you know. It was a lot of fun. It was a big treat, man. Yeah, definitely.
Now, you're from the East Coast, right?
That's right.
We're
in the New York City suburbs. We're right outside of the city, and we do this full time. It's our 12th year coming up. This month is going to be our 12th year doing this full time. My wife, Katie, and we have two kids, Gigi and Bear, 6 and 3 year old, and we're really lucky. We get to travel a lot and encourage kids to become inventors and makers. You know?
So when you are traveling, do you travel like to? You talk about it for conventions, or you go like and work at schools, or
like what we do is we kind of start the game by renting a theater, like in a town that we want to visit, and then from there we pitch to schools and assemblies, and now we're at a point where we get to do like science museums and performing arts centers, and what's just so exciting is like having something to say, you know, like I'm showcasing everything in my show is things that I've made myself. I didn't go to a store to buy, and we fill at the end of the show, like we have all these links of how kids can be maker magicians, you know, how to learn 3D design, how to program, how to take cardboard and animate it, you know. So it's just been real exciting to be an advocate for something like that.
How do you create or teach people to be creative?
It's a great question. You know, with children, you know, they have that imagination. You know, if you
That's
think
right.
about someone like Picasso, you know, he
they
said
have no boundaries.
That's right. And if you think about someone like Picasso, you know, he always said later in his life, he spent the end of his life trying to remember how to become in the beginning of his life. Like, because his imagination, what happens as we become adults is like we kind of create boundaries, right? And like, and it's like, how do we unlearn that and be free? So with kids, you know, they're just such free thinkers and their imagination's huge. And like, so they have these great ideas. And how do we take those ideas and use everyday objects so that they can go home and make something, right? Right away, mm-hmm. you know? Without being limited with money or anything else or resources, you
right.
know? Yeah.
Well, with some of those resources, you were talking about like making something out of cardboard or out of construction paper or, you know, with scissors and whatever. That,
right.
Do you put things in front of them and say, let's, you know, with a group or?
Yeah. So like what we do is, you know, like there's something called Tinkercad.com, and it's a free website on the computer. All you need is an internet connection, and kindergartners, first graders, second graders, there's tutorials and they learn 3D design. It's like virtual Play-Doh, you know, mm-hmm. like how kids play with clay or Play-Doh. It's the same idea, but you're doing it on a computer, and then boom, you can take that design and 3D print your own toy, you know? So there's libraries across the countries that have free access to 3D printers or maker spaces. And now we're taking these concepts like 30 years ago we were never able to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like an exciting time for technology. So we're really lucky. We do a lot of maker fairs, which are, if you're not familiar with maker fairs,
So
the maker fair is like this amazing thing that started as a magazine, Make Magazine, and they created something called Maker Fair, and it's called the world's greatest show and tell. Mm-hmm. So it's all levels of people being creative and bringing out things that they make. So you'll have welders, people that specialize in stained glass, carpenters, you'll have people that do technology stuff, 3D printing, 3D design like we're talking about, and they all come together at one place. So these kids and families get to be inspired and how to, like, you know, increase, add another tool to that toolbox. How do I, you know, how to take from our imagination into a product or into something real.
Are those whole different places around the United States, or is it always
So a lot of major cities have a maker fair once a year.
You just go to the website and they'll tell you like where you can go and
Children. That's right. So like if you type in the city you live in and
Houston.
They have either a mini maker fair or a maker fair, I'm sure. And so like what happens is you do a Google search and just say mini maker fair Houston or maker fair or maker space, mm-hmm. you know? And there's just a huge community now of people that are just trying to be open source in the sense that, like, hey, I'm not looking to make money here. I have this knowledge. How do I give back to the next generation by infusing what I've learned, you know? And so that's what's been really fun, is adapting classic principles of magic and recycling it. And that's what innovation is. It's like mixing old ideas and making them new again and using this new technology and trying to get kids excited about science, you know, using magic.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Jason Latimer, I guess, pretty well.
Yes, of course. He's a giant. Yeah, he's a giant.
Has he been inspirational a little bit to you?
Of course, yeah. There's definitely been stuff that he's created and done. He's doing a lot of great work in that sense. Yeah.
That's he's working with museums and also trying to get the kids to create and whatnot. He's always got exciting things to talk
about. Definitely. People like that are innovators, right? They're pushing and elevating the art form. And that's what's fun about conventions like this, too. It's like you see people that are taking old principles and just like tweaking them a little, right? And they feel so new again, you know? And that's what's, you know, that, and this whole convention thing is very new to my family, too. This is our second year pushing these conventions, and it's been real fun.
Because you've been doing the museums and theaters and other kinds of things, the schools and whatnot. Conventions are new.
So we do, you know, when you do something full-time, it takes over your whole life, you know? And a lot of it is just private parties, you know, trying to stay relevant. And then there's this beautiful subculture with conventions and magicians that are like, you know, I didn't even know that there's magicians that make a living just touring conventions. It's absolutely amazing, you know, that exists, you know? And so it's been really fun, because if you want to be great at something, you have to like absorb it in every aspect possible, and seeing as many shows as possible, going to lectures and stuff like that, is that's how we grow, you know.
In those maker fairs, by the way, that do they have outside speakers like you, or are there local teachers? I mean, do they have specialists that come in, or how's that work actually?
It's the same idea as the convention circuit.
Okay.
So like they'll have like a list of speakers that they want or performers, and to kind of get the crowd going, you know. And it's a fun little niche, because it's like I'm bringing magic, you know, classics of magic, but I'm adding robotics, and it's just been real fun finding our place in that. So there's a lot of people like Sherry Huss that are these giants in the make, you know, scene that like help, you know, help my family and like help us get work and go to different places.
Right.
You know?
Right. Now you said you're from the East Coast, so the first thing obviously comes to me when you're talking about New York City, of course, is Silly Billy.
And yes. There's a New York family, right? Yes. Every city has it, and people like that, you know, they definitely change your life in a positive way. And what's been fun is like doing Kadabra last year, which is a convention just for children performers, you know, and meeting people like Christopher T. Magician and Scott Green. These are like giants in the children's field that are climbing up, and they're super inspiring, you know. And so it's just been real fun. That's what I'm saying. It's been real exciting the past couple of years, learning, hey, who else is working, right? Like in these other cities, you know what I mean? Like you get trapped in
there's
one
room
city.
For everyone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, you know. And so now, like if I go to Chicago and rent a theater or rent a small performance art space or something, I'll call Scott Green, you know, another great children's performer, because he lives in Chicago. So it's just been fun watching this community grow. And I've noticed that by going to conventions, that everyone kind of knows everyone, and it's like this nice family. You know?
That's true. I mentioned David Kaye because I remember that years ago that he had kind of a franchise. You know, there was Silly Billy and Silly Jilly and whatever.
Yeah.
Because if he couldn't get around to everybody. Did you ever work with or for him in any of that capacity?
Not personally, but I've met him and I gave him a big hug. He came to my lecture at we did a lecture at Fantasma, and it just meant a lot. Like people like him, Alan Garber, like, you know, Magic Al, like these guys are like, they trailblazed, right? And made it easier for people like me, like, to show up, and they elevate the art form in every direction. And think about Silly Billy. Like, every time you see a kid show, no matter where you are in the world, there's going to be a prop that they use that he probably came up with, yeah. You know? Yeah. And I say that, too, with Christopher D. Magician, too. Like, he's pounding out these great books and elevating classic children's magic, you know, like these classic principles in children's magic and reinventing them. And so it's just fun. Opening up all these things and seeing where else in the world is, you know, there's just performers everywhere, right? And we all have something to give.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, speaking of that, have you traveled much over the world, you know, been over the UK and other places?
So like the past year and a half, we were so lucky. We went to Shenzhen, China for Shenzhen's Maker Faire. And I went to France this year in Paris. I did some magic. And we went to Guadalajara, Mexico for their, they had a Maker event, you know. So it's been real cool how people all kind of, you know, word of mouth is the most powerful way to get work, you know? And
it
so
is.
Like, yeah, so like, you know, and so doing like Maker Faire in New York City and stuff, you know, you make connections and then you kind of branch out. And we've been to Seattle's Mini Maker Faire and Tyler, Texas, and just all these great, it just makes it fun, you know? It makes it fun.
And when you go, do you have to carry a lot of stuff with you, a lot of props and things, or do they provide everything, or how does that?
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare because, like, everything I build is robotic, and it looks just so scary, you know, when I bring it to the airport, you know, because it's just, like, soldered stuff and circuits and so now I'm learning the ropes of how to package everything correctly. You know, there's a lot of rules.
Well, like, that is a good question. You know, I've been asked before. I said, you know, for me to ask my guests about how they get through TSA with some of the props and things. So what kind of issues or problems or stories have you got?
Everything happened to me. Like,
like
stripped,
what?
You know, like just like padded down, like, you know, huge scenes, lights, sounds, you know, like, but I learned.
Have you ever to go back in a room and explain what you're doing?
No, not that far. But if you see my suitcase, if you open it up, there's like 14 servo motors. There's wires, hot glue, tape everywhere. And it just looks bad, you know?
That's not suspicious at
all.
And
then I have like a robotic monkey squished in there and all the, So anyway, what I've learned is you have to check in the stuff that is robotic, you know, and take all the batteries out. And you got to tape the ends of each battery, put them in Ziploc bags. And those are carry-on. All the battery stuff is carry-on. You never check in lithium batteries. So, yeah, there's these rules, you know, that you learn along the way. And so now everything's kind of smooth. Like, we got stopped on our way to Texas because of all the batteries, you know. So, like, because we have so many lithium batteries that I do to use for my robots. And so, like, you know, the best thing to do is just to be cool, you know. Just like, you know, and there was a guy who was kind of getting aggressive in front of us. He's like, I'm going to miss my flight. Please, you know, can I just cut first? And you're just like, go ahead, you know, and you just stay chill. So I've had, I guess you stay chill because once you've had all the wrong things happen to you, so you know, like, what to expect. But come on, I'm sure magicians, there's got to be stories, right?
Oh, they've got a lot of props.
Like flash fire stuff and, like, you know, I don't bring any flash cotton. Actually, that's one of the things I have to go to the dealer's room today to get before tonight is some flash cotton. But yeah.
Have you ever gotten to a place in which that you get your luggage and find out that the TSA has gone through it and taken something out?
100%. They've gone through my luggage where they'll leave me this printout note that says they've been through it. But I have to say, like, they've always left everything how it was.
And they haven't actually taken anything out.
No, they have not taken anything out. But I do put big locks on my suitcases. Not big locks, but I put locks on them. So what I do now is Katie writes this nice piece of paper that says, this is Mario the Maker Magician. He's known for robotics and electronics and his magic show. We're on tour, you know, we're doing a tour. So that hopefully helps too. You know, I put posters too of like where we're going, like that advertise the city we're going to. Just because, you know, people that don't know, it's kind of crazy, man. Right. Like I had a drum stand for my suitcase so that it can become, and someone, they couldn't handle it. They're like, what is this object? It has a pipe at the end of it. Like this does not look safe. And finally the manager's like, dude, it's just a drum stand with like a pipe fitting on the top. But if he wasn't there, I don't know what would have happened, you know. So anyway, this, I could go on for hours about this.
Well, no, we got time. You know, Walter Blaney had told me before, and I'm going to ask you about some problems you may have had backstage before, because he's had, you know, his ladder suspension backstage, and he's gone and done something else and comes back and finds that, you know, things have been moved or whatever. Wow. And so he has put some like electric lightning bolts or something on there saying, you know, this is you know, don't touch or whatever, right. And he's got it, no tocar or whatever in Spanish, and different kinds of things, make sure that, because people are going to mess with something backstage,
right.
Or they'll pick up a table. I mean, one time he was at a convention, and he was watching it from the wings, and he noticed that the MC had come out with this table they were needing as a prop, and he said,
man.
Hey, that was my table.
What's
he'd actually picked up somebody's table. You just don't do that. My question is, have you had similar issues in which people are looking at your props backstage or, you know, the stagehands or anything?
I have to say, like, this is, you know, I got the tour with David, you know, with David Blaine, and so that's, you know, so, like, yeah, there's props everywhere.
It's
got to
be kind of surreal.
Oh, my goodness. It was amazing. Like, David changed my family's life the past 2 years.
How was
that?
I'm getting kind of down on the
rabbit hole. He just, you know, I did it. He needed a kid's magician for a gig, and it was crazy. It was, you know, and he...
Has he been a long-time friend to call you out of the blue, or...?
It's a long story. Yeah, so Ossie Wynn saw me at a Maker Fair,
okay?
And he saw me perform my Little Robot Lamp. And from Ossie, I guess they had a conversation with David saying, you know, I need a children's performer for this birthday party. And David called me, you know, because Ossie said, hey, you should pick Mario, you know? Like, he's been building stuff, cool stuff. And it started like that. And I could go on to tell you how nice and humble and amazing David's been, you know. And I've watched him on tour. Like, he'll stop a whole line of photos that have to be taken, you know, for a VIP part of the show. And he'll literally just show a teenager a card trick while everybody's waiting in frustration.
Yeah.
But he doesn't care, you know. It's like he sees these certain important moments in life.
Yeah,
and that really, that was something that Katie and I, that we took home with, you know. Like, because that's how we look at our children's magic, too. It's so important, like, those individual moments. I don't care if there's 500 people, like... There's those individual moments is what made me become what I am, you know, like an adult taking their time with me, you know. So anyway, yeah. So David's
that
done
could
a lot
change
of stuff.
A person's life.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah,
you know,
whenever that other people just want to take a picture or an autograph, they're going to lose that, forget about it. But if you've actually taken a few moments actually to stop with somebody and chat with them and show them something that, you know, I was just talking with John Archer the other day, who was saying that. He was early on doing something at a convention. He was performing, and he was speaking with someone, and Matt King had passed by, and he was part of this convention also. And he could see that Matt was kind of standing over to the side, waiting until they finished their conversation. And afterwards, they were finished, and they kind of turned to Matt, and Matt said, I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed your show, and it meant a lot, and it was very funny. And he said the fact that he had taken time, and he said something to me, and I was, although I'm older, you know, getting involved in magic, he said, I'm new in magic, and for someone who would have been my comedic idols to stop, and he said, what that said to me not only is encouraged me to be a better magician because someone like me of his stature, but also to have those moments with other people so I can encourage and tell people who I may not know or maybe new to magic, because that's going to encourage them to greatness.
Yeah, you just tapped like everything of why I breathe, you know, like I could, like Magi Fest changed my life because Matt King, there was 300 magicians and 200 kids on the floor. Matt King was the only magician sitting crisscross applesauce with all the kids, you know, and watched my whole show, you know, and like I had to leave. Okay.
Yeah.
But he wrote me an email, you know, and it was just this. Just like he saw the heart of what I do, you know what I mean? And like it was just, it's funny you mention him because he is a symbol of when he's on stage, look how he talks to the people that he brings up on stage. Yes. Look how he exits them when they walk off stage. That is a powerful thing, man. We all talk about that, like we know all about it, but to actually do that, like that simple story you just shared with me just bugged me out because that's how I want to be, you know? So it's important. And if there's one reason why I'm here at these conventions is to represent children's magic in that direction,
right.
You know, like that it's not just about, there's this sense sometimes with magicians, like I'm not a kiddie magician. I'm not, you know, like I need to be respected as, you know, and that stuff breaks my heart, man, you know, because when a parent says, please do magic for my kids, the greatest thing a parent has is their children,
of course.
Someone who doesn't have kids doesn't realize that, you know?
That, right?
And like, so, I, that kind of stuff is like why I'm here. It's like maybe I can just shed a little light of, hey, children's magic is important, you know? And and David was so cool. Like, this is David Blaine. There's like a parental advisory on his show. And he brings a children's magician. He's like, I just want you to bring 10, 15 kids on stage. Go on for 10 minutes. Like, just figure it out. Like, have fun.
Yeah.
And like, it was just so cool, like, to see the parents when I get off stage coming up to me and thanking me so much. Like, my kid's never been in front of 3,000 people, you know?
Yeah.
And like, and that's because of David, you know? So anyway, that's it. I'm done about that.
Well, that's interesting, I think, you know, to kind of go on tour with him because, again, like I said, have parental guidance, you know, kind of thing, but then to encourage children, entertainer, to be there and bring him on up. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I've heard nothing but good things really about David. Of course, Daniel Garcia, Danny's a good friend of mine, and he talks a lot, about what a great guy that he is all the time,
that's
too. So
right.
I'm seeing a different
Danny
side.
Garcia is an awesome dude. When we were on tour, we hit 27 cities with David, and when we got to here, Danny Garcia came backstage, and he got to hang out in the dressing room. That was the first time I met him, And he was like a kid. We're just having fun, man. And literally within a minute and a half, we're both joking around. Yeah. Just,
Enrico De La Vega, another one. They're kids at heart also.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's all because of Ossie Wind and David, giving me this chance. And then I get to meet people like Matt King. That story you shared was so powerful because that's what I'm getting out of him is every action, like that, just him sitting with the kids and it was just important to me.
Do you have a meet and greet after what you perform at these places? Or?
Yes. Yeah, we have a meet and greet. We have some merch and stuff. And then the big thing that we do is kind of like give a little list, like a little poster postcard that shows links of how you can be a maker magician. So my favorite magic book, Mark Wilson's Course in Magic, if you want to get into magic. My favorite maker links, like Thingiverse and Tinkercad.
What are some things? So people can, I'm recording this, so people can kind of write this down. Give a few tips and suggestions where they can go.
So I'm going to be doing an online course with the coming up, and we're going to talk about how to be a maker magician in that sense, how to utilize this new technology that's free and open source. So for kids, it's the same idea. Tinkercad.com. Tinkercad, TinkerCad.com. You create a profile, and within a minute, you get these online tutorials of how to virtually make things, like 3D design.
It's so, CAD, C-A-D, not
yeah,
T.
Yeah, that's right. Right. And what's cool about it is that you learn how to make a spoon, or you learn how to make, so it's like virtual Play-Doh. And kindergarten, first grade, second graders are learning this. And that's what I use to build all my robotics. So once you master that after a week of just doing that and tinkering, now you have this little superpower, And then you go to Thingiverse.
Wow.
Yeah, Thingiverse.com is the universe of things.
Thingiverse?
Yeah. Okay. Thingiverse.com. Check it out. So it's like the Google for things. So say like, your stove knob broke. So you type in stove knob. And there's someone who designed a stove knob that can be hacked or rendered so that you can replace a stove knob on your stove and 3D print it, And then we have recommendations for 3D printers because you can get a 3D printer for like $100 now on Amazon.
No way.
Oh, 100%. It's amazing.
I thought they were still in the thousands.
No. It's like amazing. And so... Huh. I think it's important when you do something, in front of people that you make sure you have something to say, and it feels good to have something to say, like, hey, this is something that inspired me and changed my life. And and the Arduino, it's called Arduino. It's a little credit card size microcontroller, and you use code, words, and letters to make motors move. I mean, imagine,
You weren't at Magic Live this year, were you?
I wasn't.
Okay, because there was a gentleman who talked about the Arduino, and he spent 20 minutes talking about it, showed a picture, and everybody's like, I've never even heard the word before. And all of a sudden, people are Googling this, and that sounds like that is the thing that you need.
Yeah, it definitely. And I'm
spell
shocked.
Spell that, too.
I'm shocked that magicians haven't tapped into it, because this is what changed my career from just staying in one place to being
really?
Able to travel. 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Arduino is Arduino, and it's about the size of a credit card. If you go on Amazon and just type in Arduino kit or something, you could get a little kit of it. And you plug it into your computer, you download the software, and, you can make a servo motor move by code. So that means a servo motor...
Easily, also. That was one of the things. Because a lot of people are a little bit intimidated whenever they think, I can't code things. Well,
right.
Yes, it's just...
It's easy. And so basically my lecture is how I make a servo motor move 180 degrees, and I condense the code into like a little paragraph so that magicians can use that code to make their top hat open and close, or to make a cigar box open and close, or to make their table be able to knock something off, And so the possibilities are endless, and it starts with this little code, So that's basically why we're doing conventions. It's kind of, introducing that idea, if you want to further...
Now, what do you do if something goes wrong? And I go back for just a moment, some things that are even fairly easy, even like invisible thread whenever it breaks.
Yeah.
I remember Michael Lamar being on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show many years ago and doing, he's going to do a floating bill, for Johnny. And once that the thread breaks, if you don't have a backup, it's like, okay, let me show you something else.
Oh, I could totally feel what probably Michael Lamar went through that night. Because I was at Kadabra convention and that night I did Marcel the Monkey for the performance, the gala, and I plug in the plug, and I look, and the ground wire just snaps. I guess it got bent so many times, and I what do? I mean, I'm like bugging out, and I just go to my bag and I get Whit Hayden's four ring routine that I've done for 12 years, yeah, and I just jump into that, you know? Right. So that stuff happens. But if you think about it, I've heard people, like, they're multiplying bottles break on a cruise ship, you know, like anything breaks, you know? And you just go with the flow. And I think the definition of a great performer, I don't care in what medium, is how they resolve the problems that happen on stage. You know, it's just inevitable.
Like, but that comes from experience and
time. That comes from experience. Yeah.
You can't do it unless you know something's going to be happening, you know. At that, you know, you can have some backups and everything then ready, but then there's always going to be that one in a million chance that this thing goes wrong or something happens, and, you know, what are you going to do?
Exactly. And think about when you bring someone up on stage. It's just such a mixed bag.
Okay, that's true.
And imagine if when you bring a kid on stage, you know, it's the same thing. It's even, like, more heightened because you just don't know.
You don't know what kind of the thing that they're going through. Or, you know, they're shy or they're or not. And what they're going to be, they might be excited. I mean, you probably had kids wet their pants on your own stage.
Oh, I have. I could everything I could. I can't even tell you. You have to go through everything. And that's what I was reading about this morning. It's like we have to, like, take risks in life. You know, if you're too afraid to take a risk, you're too afraid to get better, you know? And, like, it's just so important. That's what was this experience for me with David was I got to just do it, even though it was so scary. It was like 4,000 people, you know, every night. And it's not a kid show. There's no kids in the audience. So everything was stacked against me. But I'm so happy now that I did it because, like, I feel less scared of everything, you know? And
because you can do a kid show for adults now, you feel.
Right. Yeah. It's like I'm selling, hey, these kids are important. Look, they're laughing, and that energy, let it that reciprocate onto you, that you guys enjoy it. So it was a great challenge, you know? Because, right. Like, listen, when you perform, people come to see you, right? But when you're an opening act, it's different, you know? You have to, like, you know, it's a whole other ballgame. And that was my first time doing something like that. So it was really cool.
Well, you know, moving in to electronics and robotics and everything the way that you have, you obviously must have started out as a child and doing some just usual stratospheres and things, you know, with kids and candy and whatnot. What kind of was the thing that flipped your switch, your robotic switch, to make you start going into electronics?
You know what's funny? I didn't get into magic till I was 22. Okay. I never seen a magic show until I was 22. I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I went to a place called Hippity Hop Magic. I thought it was supposed to be an antique shop because I love antiques, and it was a magic shop. And when I opened the front door, my favorite scene from my favorite movie, I'm not lying, is playing on this little VHS tape, you know, television in the back of the room. And I took it as a little sign, and I bought a trick or two. And then next thing you know, within a week, I'm hanging out there like it's a coffee shop, and Jim and Michelle Parks, Jim Parks was nuts. He taught me the hippity up rabbits, the stratosphere, for the sake of just because I was so passionate about learning magic. You know, I couldn't sleep at night; like, it just took over my life. And then I joined the magic club there in Grand Rapids, and I wanted to be Copperfield. I wanted to be Lance Burton.
Of
you
course,
know,
of course,
and like,
yeah.
And I come home to New York, and when I do kids shows, I get better reactions, you know, and
they're more pure. That's true.
I don't know, and so my big dream in my 20s was just to do what I love, you know, and that was all I cared about because my father was a mason, stonemason, and it was hard, and so like that was a big goal, and all these magicians in New York City don't want to do birthday parties, so they're giving me their birthday party gigs, and within 2 years I'm paying partially my rent, you know, with magic, and then within 2 years we're doing it full time with my wife. We quit our day jobs and we're cold calling. And I realized the very thing I was running away from was the very thing that I'm meant to do.
You should have run towards.
Yeah. Is magic for kids. Like, that's what I was running away from because of all the things that other people say about it, you know? And sometimes we start thinking of what we're trying to please other people, you know? And I didn't... It was such a weird jump for me because, like, all of a sudden when it clicked and... But then there's a whole other growth spurt, too, because it's like you have to, you know, find who you are within those classics too, you know, and so that, you know, then you go through a valley where, you know, every magician is doing the stratosphere and the hippity hop rabbits, you know, what are you doing different?
Exactly.
And
what separates you?
Yeah. So I had a show where these parents, you know, they didn't know that I heard them and they're like, oh, that was Mario the Magician. Like, we waited to like see this guy. Yeah. And it really messed me up and it broke me. But the truth is within 6 months, I took all my love for Arduino and microcontrollers, and I built this whole series of an opening where banners fall from my suitcase, and they, you know, they fall off the suitcase, snake cans open, and flags go this and that. And it was this beautiful 2-minute comedy segment that came from that criticism. And all of a sudden now, you know, I'm opening up this new door, you know? And like, so I kind of just ran with it, you know? And I built a robotic monkey and started doing Maker Faire, and I'm still learning, you know? That's what happens when you go to conventions. You get humbled because there's so many great performers, right?
That's right, but they're all a little bit different, and that's why that I think that they will bring in these kinds of performers, because that it might hit different people on different levels that will inspire. I mean, because whenever I talk to people at conventions and ask, you know, what is your favorite actor, what do you like, it'd be this or that. Not everyone, it's not all the same flavor.
That's right. You nailed it. And that's a great example of what makes up an audience, right? It's like you have to tap every one of those tastes, hopefully, in your show, so that like at the end of it they're standing up or they're at least applauding, you know. And I've been researching a lot about Tommy Wonder, you know, and I keep hearing stories about every time he performed he got a standing ovation. I mean, that's a powerful thing, you know. No matter where he went, you know. And and I've just been watching old videos, Fism and stuff, and like every vanish he does is so slow and just so perfect. And you know, that stuff, you know, it takes time, and you got to put your heart into it.
But I've got to ask that you were saying you were in Grand Rapids, then were you going to school there? So a question that you may be asked by others, but I'm curious, did you have some sort of an electronics or engineering background that, you know, kind of encouraged you to say, well, I can take this Arduino and, you know, apply it to magic? Or was that just an epiphany you had overnight or see somebody else?
Yeah, that's a great question. I left my parents' house when I was 17. I hitchhiked cross country. I met kids that were just like lost boys. They just hitched everywhere, and I jumped on that bandwagon. And the person I was dating that was on the road, her family lived in Big Rapids, Michigan. So her parents, you know, ended up saying, "Hey, if you stop hitchhiking, I will buy you a car." You know, and it started like that. And you know, lo and behold, next thing you know, I'm in Big Rapids, Michigan. I'm from New York. I'd never been to Michigan, you know. And then from there, going to the antique shop, going to Grand Rapids, it just made sense, you know. My favorite scene from my favorite movie that I saw was from the movie Hook, with it's the story of Peter Pan with Robin
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman. That's right. He's Hook. So anyway, in the scene, it's like Robin Williams is in Neverland, but he doesn't see anything because he refuses to believe anything. And it's this scene where they're at a dinner table and everyone's eating empty things, like, you know, empty spoons, empty bowls.
Oh, yes.
But to the kids, it's all food. And he finally, out of frustration, you know, scoops up this empty thing and flicks it at Rufio, and it turns into ice cream and splats on his face. And it was this eureka moment. And then he looks, and everywhere is food, and everywhere is ice cream, and everywhere is everything. And it was that scene. Mm-hmm. And it just, I don't know, man. I get very funny with that kind of stuff. It was very important to me that I saw that. And that's been my life, is like, how do I create that moment when I have that 45 minutes in front of these kids, you know? That moment of like, these are just props, or they're going to come to life, right?
Right.
Just like in the movie. And so it's just been fun having like an animatronic monkey and a robotic lamp that, you know. And
I'm always curious to know what people's creative muse is. In other words, do you have somebody or something that you go to or think of, or that you have an idea, or it's like, you know, if I tweak this a little bit? But once you've already done something, are you coming up with new ideas, or are you just doing some variations of some things that you've already got?
Yeah, it's a great question. Coming back from seeing David, where everything is just so perfect, you know, like he's worked so hard for his show, it made me realize like how much more I want to create that in my life too, like simplifying, taking out the fat out of my show, like getting to the meat right away, you know, like the magic moments, especially in the beginning, how important it is, that opening routine. What are you doing? Those first 30 seconds are so important because the parents are watching,
right.
So are the kids, and like, you know, and
they make that judgment about you also.
Yes, that's right. And so that's been the thing I've been looking at, is just what are the hard-hitting material that we've had in magic? What are the classics? And I watch old FISM competition videos on YouTube, starting from the 1940s, 50s. They're all up there, and I just take notes, you know? And you know, so, like, whatever little thing inspires me, I try to research it and rock it out. So I'm just obsessed with slapstick comedy. I love people like George Carl and the Great Ballantine and Al Flasso. I love, you know, that kind of stuff. And Bill Irwin, you know, I love all that stuff. So I just try to adapt that, adding magical touches and robots.
But do you have something that at night, I mean, like when you wake up, it's like, oh, there's an idea, and you jot something down? Or perhaps is it something that you see on TV or in the movies?
No, I have an idea, like, you know, and I try to get, like, I start with what I want it to look like, and then I just kind of, how do I get there as easy as possible? And I write a lot in my journal. I carry a journal everywhere.
That's so good advice. Yeah. Most people don't do that.
No, I have it right here.
I see you carrying it with you. Yeah.
And nights like,
are you an artist also? Do you jot down some, like, drawings?
Yeah, I wasted 10 years of my life playing music, making no money, making paintings, you know. And that's like,
art is never a waste.
But like here, you know, so what I'm doing is I'm creating my set for tonight. So I've been just writing it down over and over, so it's embedded in my brain, and now I'm even drawing pictures of each image.
I see
so
that, yeah, the shoe and all. Yeah.
So that I can be at ease as much as possible, so I know exactly what my order is. And
so what, you're not doing the same set like you get every show?
Well, this is a different thing. This is a gala event. There's four other people. You know, what are they doing? I can't repeat what they're doing.
Well,
or like,
I'm sure that nobody's going to be doing what
true,
you're doing.
It's true.
I mean, that's why they're hiring you. You're unique and original.
No, but like,
you're probably not going to do a linking ring routine to compete.
Right. But I have to add in some touches, you know, like I love the Miser's Dream. You know, I love Sponge Balls because they're so visual on stage, you know. And
but
so
your
like,
presentation of that, I don't
it's
care.
All totally different. You're right. Amen.
I remember, for an example, you know, like with Chris Capehart was doing linking rings. And
yes.
I think that Oscar Munoz was in the same build even. But their presentation of the
Amen.
Linking rings is completely different.
And talk about a giant Chris Capehart doing the linking rings, man. That three ring routine is just. And Gene Anderson. Oh, I forgot to say, when I was in Grand Rapids, the family friend was Gene Anderson, just randomly, you know, at the house I was staying at. So Gene came once a month and spent 3-4 hours with me. And I didn't even know anything about magic. And he taught me Whit Hayden's four ring routine, you know.
Right.
And
which is my favorite. I use all the time.
That routine, you could do it for preschool. You can do it up to seniors. You know, there's always a way to play that, you know. But anyway, that's a great example. You take a routine like that. It's like covering a great song if you want to be a magician. There's a verse, there's a chorus, there's a bridge. Why do those exist? Well, let's listen to the best thing and then cover that, you know, and remember, it's the same idea. It's like Whit Hayden's routine has all the foundations of a classic, you know. Mm-hmm. Same with Di Vernon's Cups and Balls, you know, or like, you know, you take those and then how do I add that to robotics and stuff and, you know. So if you see my robots, all it is like classic vaudeville vent bits that I'm putting into a monkey or...
That's funny.
You know?
You're drawing inspiration from those old classics.
Oh, 100%. Because I'm not going to just show you an abstract robot and expect everyone to love it.
And the kids have never seen this either, of course.
That's right. So it's a new generation of kids and all that. And so, like, so I'm just taking all these old vent bits and putting them into something that I can walk away from. So it's happening. And that's one of my favorite things. That's why I love magic so much, is like all the automaton stuff where you can walk away from it and it animates itself. Like,
speaking of that, have you been over to see Johnny Gaughan's museum and his Turk and some of his automaton?
No, I want to go so bad. I want to see.
He's
such
a nice guy. He's lovely. And he's got the most wonderful place, you know, where he actually has his workshop that he builds all the stuff and whatnot.
Man. Where
but
is
then,
that? Is that in California?
It's in Los Angeles.
Wow.
That's right. Just send him an email in advance and let him know when you're going to be coming.
Take me there. Please. I want to go.
If you go, I've actually posted whenever I had done a podcast with him.
Uh-huh.
You can go back and do a search for Johnny Gaughan. And also on that blog, I've got a couple of videos that I kind of walk through. But the cool thing is, I think, and not only, of course, the Turk was something who inspired me, and I've got every book on the Turk has been written.
Really?
That
nice.
Is something I like chess, and I think that was,
yeah.
I love automatons. But the fact that he has a small room that, I mean, you've got a workshop with all these materials and everything all over the place, just like a big warehouse.
Right,
and
right.
Then this small room that looks like a little library and sitting room, you know, with overstuffed chairs and books, and then all this unique collectible things that he has refurbished all around there that you've seen on television or whatever, and then with some soft classical music, you know, wafting in the background. I mean, it is awesome.
That sounds amazing.
But just contact him, and I mean, he loves to show this as well.
And
the cool thing is, he actually has an automaton of Harry Houdini sitting at a table, and that he will put a piece of paper underneath his hand, and he signs his name. It's like, you know, this is to Mario, and then he'll say Harry Houdini. You know, so you got an original. Of,
who made that automaton? I have to ask him.
I don't know if he made it or he just refurbished it, but
I've never heard of that. That's amazing. That's like, that's what I love, you know, is all that mechanical stuff so much. I love it almost more than magic, you know, and so like the idea is how to bridge that. And what's cool is that we live in a time where kids are making that kind of stuff, you know, where you don't have all the gears and all that complicated stuff. You just have a servo motor and that little Arduino and you just plug in the wires, three wires,
right.
And you can all of a sudden animate an arm or an elbow, you know. And then the other thing is Del Rey, you know, like,
oh my goodness.
I just want to hold one of his props one day, or like, I want to own something that he's done. Like, I'm just so blown away. My friend Paul Keeve, he's like this amazing human being. He saw Del Rey's collection a couple weeks ago, And they were showing the inside of some of his work and the amount of labor that went into just a scrolling message on his table.
Right.
Like, there wasn't scrolling LEDs in the 70s.
Right.
It's like a black ribbon that's on a motor and a neon light behind it. And he had to hand punch each hole in it to create the message. I mean, that's like the Tommy Wonder thing. It's just, it takes that much work to stand out.
It is amazing, when you stop and think about what he had to bring in order to do just what would seem to be a small show.
That's right.
That these things kind of happened, and, it just looked like a common prop. I remember at conventions sometimes that they would, where he would appear, and they would have the room locked off for like an hour or so in advance, and I think, what are they doing, setting up chairs? I don't understand.
Right.
And you go in, and it's just a table, But all the things he had to have to make sure that the things were set, and the wires and
so
whatnot.
You saw him live, huh?
Oh, several times.
Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
I've sat cross-legged with him on the floor, actually.
No way.
Yeah, at some conventions in the past.
And he's definitely one of my heroes.
He's a nice guy.
I wish there was more footage, or just I wish he was elevated more, as an artist. Like,
you read the book, of course.
I mean, I didn't, it's a long story, but yes, yeah. I research him online constantly. So, I see all his bits and routines and.
He was a pioneer in what you do,
Yeah, 100%.
But there are so many things that you can do now, of course, with smaller digital things, that he was having to take all this additional time. But the things that he used to do then also, when he would go to some corporate events or whatever, he would have to take his table with him. It's not just a deck of cards. It's like his whole equipment has to come with me.
That's right. And there's a routine with that table with the little mouse that scurries around. And
come on, Willie. I'm just waiting for you, Willie.
Beautiful. and people have no idea the amount of labor that's in this little mouse, that's carrying it,
Well, today, they use a lot of, I say they, we as magicians, we use apps on phones or iPads or whatever else. And I love that.
Yes.
I was just talking to Harry Allen about that recently as a dealer, and he was saying we agree that it's better if you have something with the volunteer's phone instead of your phone. Because, in other words, if you have something, you're going to say, oh, where'd you get that app? It's not like, it's, but if
it's
I borrow your phone, then something give you your phone back, it's like, how'd that happen?
That's right. Know? And I had someone at this convention do something with our phone that blew my mind, because it's a big difference when it's your phone. And actually, that was one of my favorite lectures too. Was Michael Weber, just his whole focus was about walking away from the magic and letting the spectator do all the work, and that the magic happens to them.
Yeah,
and
like cards across for one person,
goodness,
kind of a thing.
That
was the most amazing.
Cards across was worth the whole convention.
The convention, in my opinion.
I felt so stupid. Like, am I just the only one that doesn't know about this? It was just amazing. That kind of stuff is worth the whole trip. What a cool guy. And so it's just been fun, man. I just love meeting
people. Well, encouraging
students,
kids particularly, because nowadays with short attention spans and things in which that they, science and math are two things
that
are not sexy, and trying to get them involved. That's why I think that STEM is important.
Oh, that's 100% the driving force of why I can travel, is the whole STEM STEAM initiative. And people are getting funding for these makerspaces, and then they're like, what do? We got the funding. We have these 3D printers, CNC machines. I don't know how to use them. What do we do? And then, they get people from outside, from the maker movement, do some lectures. And then I come in, and I try to make it fun, I do the robots and all that stuff and show the kids, hey, if you put the time in, you can make this kind of stuff, So it's just been exciting to be part of the story. Part of the story.
Yeah. And so your story is just being written, literally. I mean, you got your journal that you carry with you all the time.
That's right. That's right.
What are your plans? What's happening for the future? What's Mario's future look like?
So, we were on tour, and my favorite spot that we went to was Venice Beach. So we're Katie enjoyed it too. So we're trying to see for the next year how we can book our tour to get to California, where we're just making money all the way through. So we're paying all our bills and with our kids and that we're having fun,
And when you get to Los Angeles, be sure and see Johnny Gaughan.
Oh, I am definitely... I'll reach out. Maybe you can help me sell that. I have an in, instead of just cold writing. It's just so important that we... I guess the thing I want to say is just, it's just so important that we give, So everywhere I go, I meet kids from other maker fairs where they're passionate performers, and I have them open for me, teenagers, 13, 14-year-old performers, and it's just been so fun to give back, to give them that moment. So, we have certain cities we're going to on purpose, mm-hmm, because of kids and families that got in touch with us that are passionate about magic and giving them a chance to perform. And I saw David do that too, where there were times where he just took his time and just talk to someone for 10 minutes, like kids, yeah, you know? Right. And I see that at this convention, too. It's just so key, man, because, like, a lot of these magic clubs, too, it's like we have to give back so that the fire keeps burning, you know?
I wanted to ask you earlier. You know? I forgot to say, that has there been something that you have made, perhaps, or tried to build, and it didn't work, and you kept tinkering with this? No, this isn't, you know, I like the idea, and then the technology isn't there. Then later, it's like something flips in your switch, either that you come back to it and then redo that, or you just kind of give up on it and forget about it, or?
Yeah. Marcel the monkey, you know, he's the ending of my show. I didn't have a 3D printer. I didn't know anything about robotics. I just built out of wine cork, clothes hanger wire, paper mache, this creepy looking monkey head, yeah. That, you know, and then I downloaded the Arduino, I bought what was there. There was no blogs yet. It was like 2007, you know, but from there, if you look at Marcel now, like his head is all, you know, homemade, and then the whole rest of his body is all 3D printed. Oh. So it's like an evolution of I knew what I wanted. And eventually,
this is Marcel version 3.0.
Yeah, exactly. Those are good. And now I'm at a point where how do I make it so that within my show I can give kids a little magic kit, like a maker magic kit, you know, where they can where they can tinker with a little bit of programming and it does magic.
You know? Have you thought about putting together a book or something, or do you have booklets that you
sell
back?
Well, that's the goal right now. Is we're trying to figure out how to. That's what was Michael Weber's lecture was so good because
it was inspirational.
You know why? Because like people that never got into magic, like Katie doesn't, my wife doesn't do any magic. It was like tricks that she could do by the end of the lecture and that were powerful and they were not generic, you know? And like they weren't cheesy. Like, you know, that's the idea for me. I want to be like Michael Weber with my electronics, you know? Yeah. Where the kids at the end of it within half an hour, because kids' attention span are so short, you know? So within that hour, half hour, they can create something that's rewarding and that they can perform. And that they made, you know what I'm saying? So it's like multiple layers there, but it's important, you know, because it's just there's so many.
They have much more confidence also in themselves if it's something they made.
That's right. And it feels so much better. Like, you know, so I guess that's if my next 5-year goal plan is just kind of like, how do I elevate these small little signature pieces in, you know, into 5-minute pieces or, you know, and that they become richer. That's all, you know.
But your long-term plan, you continue to travel? You want to be, like, in one place or be associated with a museum or something, like a children's museum where they're making things and being the local curator?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just want freedom, you know? Like, I just want to be able to take my family somewhere and be able to get work where I go. And I love, you know, my greatest tour that we did with Katie, I have a 1971 Volkswagen Transporter. It's a Volkswagen bus, and there's no air conditioning. I redid the whole thing, the inside, and we did a tour all the way to the halfway through the country where we made money, and we got hired gigs, and we rented theaters, and it was so slow. We broke down 5 times. I did TV appearances where my knees were all muddy because we broke down on the way to, like, these TV spots. Man. But it was so, when we made it to the Colorado Rockies, we made it to the Colorado Mountains in this Volkswagen bus going 55 miles an hour, ready to do a show in Colorado Springs, and I'm holding both my kids against the mountains, you know. It was powerful, you know. And so, like, I want to do that all the time, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I see that you're at this point about to break open. And, you know, like, for an example, that Carissa Hendricks is 31 years old, and she's at a point in her career that she is getting to, you know, have more notoriety because she's been attending some conventions. People know who she is, and that then she's, you know, wanting to put conventions behind her already and kind of move on to some other theatrical kinds of things and some other festivals and whatnot. In fact, that she's at a position now, she said, I'm selling my house, and I'm going to be homeless soon because I'm traveling so much, I don't need the house, you know, or the furniture or whatever.
You know, she's a great example because I saw her at Kadabra, like, 2 years ago, and I was telling her, like, her appearance at the Magic Castle was like a 5-minute thing. It was so rich, you know? Like, she's utilizing all the things that make her, and then she's capitalizing on that, and that's a very hard thing to do, you know? It's a very hard thing to do.
It is, you know, and once again, there you have to script it, and like in hers is very tightly scripted as far as what she said, because she has created a character.
Oh, 100%.
Just as you have, I mean, by talking with you, that you're very much the same kind of person, animated and everything, as you are on stage, you know? And so, do you script your show as well to have a different character?
You know, like, inspiring people like Aussie Wynn and stuff, like, they record every performance, you know, and I try to do that, and it almost makes me more nervous, you know? Like, I just can't. Like, I'm trying.
Because you're trying to do something in your head that you're trying.
My strength as a person, I feel like, is as the more I live in the moment, the stronger my performance is and the stronger I am and the more I come across what I want to say from my heart, you know? So, like, what I'm learning now is, what I showed you in my journal is just the images of the three routines I'm doing tonight. So I have that in my head, you know? I think it was Paul Draper, I don't know who it was, but that did the same thing where it's like you just, you know, it's just important. You know, for me, my style, the more I look at other people, I was trying to write everything down, like my jokes and all that. It just everyone's different, you know? And
that's true. Some people are visual. Some people have to, you know, more scripted. And you know, I listened to a fellow's act here a while back, and it sounded as if he was recording or he had memorized a script because there was no tone in it, you know, in this quality of his voice and everything. And afterwards, I spoke with him and I asked about it being scripted. He said, yeah, it was very tightly scripted. I said, well, it sounded like you were reading it. You know, so I was reading it in my mind.
Yeah.
And he said it was something new. But I said, you know, it just doesn't seem natural.
Yeah. You know? Well, you nailed another big point. It's like, and this is something I'm learning because working with David, too, like I'm just learning. I feel so lucky that I got to see how an amazing show is produced and how, I, you know, so like, I'm just trying to take what I learned and trying to figure it out because like David messed my life up in a good way. He forced me to dream bigger, you know, like, and that's, it's hard now. Cause it's like, I want to dream bigger now. So I'm just, and I don't mean that means like to perform for more people. Or
no,
to,
but look what he did. Just, certainly. I mean, he took a street performing idea and made a universe out of it, you know, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And, well, think about that. He got famous for such a specific thing, and now he's this powerhouse on stage, on a theater. I mean, that's amazing.
Worldwide attention.
Yeah, and, like, that takes a lot of work, man. You know, like, that's... So the idea for me is, like, I need to, what David taught me is like I need to focus at what I'm great at, and it's and inspiring kids, you know, and families, and so I'm just trying to figure out how to, like, all those small touches, like adding a little confetti at the end of a bit can add a lot, you know.
Sure.
A little bit of smoke at a vanish can add a lot. So I'm just trying to add these little touches, and I've seen the payoff of that.
That's true. Like Shin Lim, you know, has used some smoke or something. You know, like I remember seeing him on AGT or something, or live, of course. And sometimes that's what you remember. It's like that's what kind of is his unique selling point. You know, as
well,
USP.
Well, think about you know how he's a great representation of what's current. Mm-hmm. You know, and you said attention span. We're all changing, man. So, like, you need those extra touches. And if you're not using them, you're going to fall behind a little. So I'm just realizing that. So I've been – it's so funny. I do this routine with clown noses on my hat that keep falling everywhere. And then at the end, I just vanish them, and it's whatever. But now I vanish them, and then red turns to red confetti. And I get this huge, whoa, you know? I was like, why didn't I do this years ago? It took so long. But anyway – but that's what I'm trying to figure out, you know.
It's just the experience. You know, the more shows you do, then you get the flight time. I think that's what's important is doing it.
You nailed it. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what it comes down to is flight time, you know. And that's the goal is to just take any gig possible and stop complaining, you know. And just
you learn from every experience.
You learn from every experience and it's just important, you know. Like I just did more that the more we're working, the better we get. That's it. It's simple, you know.
Yep. I think you've nailed it there as well. Listen, I appreciate your time in talking about this. The name of my podcast, by the way, Mario, of course, is The Magic Word. And
awesome.
So my question I always like to finish with talking with my guests is, what is your magic word? I don't mean like abracadabra or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what is it that is your philosophy of life? What is something that makes you tick when you wake up in the morning? I mean, what it can be a phrase, not necessarily a word.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What do you live by? What's your philosophy?
We cannot do great things. Only small things with great love, you know? That's from Mother Teresa, and that's a...
Wow.
Yeah, it's an important thing. It's like, we, you know, it took a team to get us to the moon, you know? Like, it doesn't, you know, we all have a little thing that we can give to the world, but when we put a lot of love into that little thing, it changes people, you know? So, yeah, that's an important thing for me, 100%.
Awesome. We'll just leave it at that right there. Well, good luck in the future. You got a great career in front of you, and I'm so glad to spend a few minutes with you as well. And also, I'm sure that the listeners are going to get a lot out of this and have to come back and listen to some of your philosophy.
Awesome.
You know, you were a trendsetter.
Thanks so much
and
for
an inspiration,
too. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So with the Magic Word Podcast. That was Mario the Maker. This is Scotty out. Well, that was some fun, and I do want to thank Mario for being my guest here this week. And again, I want to encourage all of you listeners to go to the website over to themagicwordpodcast.com, where you can find those links to the Makers Faires and Tinkercat and some of the other things he was talking about in this podcast. But golly, you know, what a varied background that he's had to bring him where he is here today. So he's just one of these free spirits that is kind of like, it reminds me, I guess, kind of a deadhead, you know, someone who kind of follows the Grateful Dead, you know, from place to place in an old VW van they painted up or something. You know, he's just got a free spirit about him that is very childlike, so he can really relate well to children, and you can really tell that as well. So anyhow, fantastic. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad I had a chance to meet him, and I admire him so much for all that he's doing for magic and for youth and for inspiring people. I hope that he inspires you to maybe help your children then also to go and check out some of these things and to be creative then as well. So again, thank you, Mario, very much for being on the podcast here today. Well, it's time for a couple of product reviews from Murphy's Magic Supplies. And these are some products that you can buy from your favorite magic dealer, like theperfecttrick.com. So go and check them out, because they've got these things in store and they can get them right over to you. We're only going to cover a couple of things here today rather than our usual three for Thursday in order to keep this kind of brief and to the point. But they are a couple of goodies I think that you guys will like. I know I did. Runaway Joker by Peter Nardi and alakazam.co.uk is a pretty cool trick. This actually is kind of like a version of the Chicago Opener, where basically that a Joker is shown and suddenly that this, it's the one where the regular bicycle deck, by the way, where that the Joker is seen riding a bicycle. Suddenly, after a card is selected and signed, returned to the deck, then apparently that the Joker leaves his card behind. So there is actually a missing Joker, if you will. I mean, the Joker, the rest of the artwork is around the Joker and the signs over him, but the Joker is nowhere to be found. His bicycle, apparently he's running through the deck to locate the card. And then when you go through the deck, you do find on the back of one of the cards is actually a Joker, which is printed on the back of the card. It's not like a rub-off sticker or anything. It's actually printed on the card. And of course, when you turn that card over, then that is their signed card. And then later you can, through a variety of methods that he teaches you, change this back so this way that the Joker, several things you could do, either is gone and disappears and stays gone, or he can return back to the Joker the way that it was originally, with there's being no Joker on the back of their card when they turn it over, but the Joker's actually back where he's supposed to be on his own card. Anyhow, several different variations that Peter explains here on the link. There's not a DVD in the box, just a couple of gimmicks that you need in order to do this effect, and then a link where you can go to learn this effect, and he teaches you a table version as well as an in-the-hands kind of a strolling cocktail walk-around kind of an effect. And again, two or three different ways to affect this with different handlings, different outcomes, and I like his teaching style, and it is it's great. I enjoy this little trick. I've always enjoyed the Chicago Opener, and this is a very cool little variation of that. And if you're going to be carrying around a couple of cards to do a Chicago Opener or to palm off and get rid of this, you can do that then later as well. So this is something I'd recommend, because I might start carrying this around and using it then myself. So again, it's called Runaway Joker by Peter Nardi, and it's recommended. The Four King Miracle by Henry White is produced by World Magic Shop, and I must say that the Four King Miracle is a Four King Miracle. Okay, I get what they're trying to say in the title of this is kind of being a double entendre, but it is a pretty amazing trick for the simplicity of it. Basically, there are two aces that are plainly shown. Then you show the fronts and backs, and then suddenly with a quick flip that there is a king that pops up between the two of them. You put that down, point to that with one of the jokers, and then you just kind of rotate the cards around, or you can flip them again, and a second king is again shown between the two. Put that down, and then you can cleanly and slowly turn over the other two cards to show that they have changed to kings. So you have all four kings, clubs, hearts, spades, and diamonds. You scoop them up and put them back in your pocket. It's just that clean. This is a nice little effect. It's one of those things that seems, again, so simple that this must have been thought of by someone some time ago, but it's not something that I recall having seen. I think, again, it's a beautiful little thing. It's an easy thing to do, definitely something for beginners that you could do pretty much right out of the pack. And it's a nice little effect in which that as a little bonus thing at the end as part of the routine that they give you on the online instructions is that after the jokers have apparently disappeared, you then spread the deck and show the two jokers that are back in the deck. You can then add the cards and then cop them off later and put them in your pocket and dispose them however and whenever that you want. But the it's one of those things I would not necessarily pull out and do as a packet trick. I would prefer, although they really don't talk about this, I would probably put these two gimmick cards in the deck and have them somewhere that you can access them easily, so that you could do kind of a deck and play, not a shuffle deck and play. I guess you could do something else with it. But at some point you pull these cards out, perform this little miracle, and then you can take them back out and continue with the deck as you were before. But the point is that this should not be presented, in my opinion, as a packet trick individually with just the two aces changed into the four kings. It should be something that appears to be quite organic, that actually you've taken two jokers from the deck, then continue as normal. Or put the deck back, do a cold deck switch, whichever. Anyhow, very easy to do, very visual, and it's something I think that could be part of your repertoire if you want to carry around a couple of gimmick cards. And again, it's something I would recommend from Henry White called Four King Miracle. Well, there you have it. A couple of cool card tricks, both of which are actual gimmicks that you can either add to your deck or that you can have them individual. Well, actually, the Runaway Joker you need to put into a deck, and as I recommend for the Four King Miracle, that you should also have that actually added to the deck and then pull out those jokers to do the trick. But they are both gimmicks that are available with an online tutorial, and I mean no DVD or anything comes with them, just the gimmicks that you get with these. But a couple of cool things that are available from your favorite dealer, and again, I always suggest that you go to a real brick and mortar shop, and in lieu of that, if there's not one near you, then to use theperfecttrick.com. Well, that's going to put a wrap on this week's podcast. And again, I appreciate you coming back and listening each week. And to make sure that you don't miss another episode, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. There are so many different ways, whether you're using iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher or TuneIn or iHeartRadio or goodness, yeah, there are a lot of podcatchers that you can download and listen to this then as well. And please help us out by helping to spread the word. Please be sure and tell your friends if you happen to belong to a magic club or you're talking to the magicians and they talk about what podcast you listen to. Be sure and tell them that you listen to the Magic Word Podcast, and they should too. And I appreciate you passing on that word. And if you happen to use iTunes and you could help us out, then with a little bit of your time, just go over to the podcast store or the iTunes store actually and look on the podcast for the Magic Word and leave us a 5-star review. A few comments there will always help boost our ratings and our rankings up with iTunes then a little bit more then as well. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that we cannot do great things, only small things with great love. This is Scotty out.